Good morning, everybody. Happy Sabbath. My name is Jamie. I'm part of the Elders team at the One Turner Adventist Church, and I'm broadcasting to today from one of the offices inside our veterinary clinic. My wife Mandy and I are both vets, and this is a piece of our office, just a convenient place for me to come to you today from. I wanted to start off today just actually telling you a little bit about my work, that we have people coming to see us all the time with their pets, but one of the common questions I get asked about when people are interacting with me, there's a few common questions that come up, and one of them is, do you get bitten very much? To which I say usually, well, no, I don't get bitten a lot, but why are you asking me that? Because usually the people who ask that have an animal that's about to bite me, which is a good early warning, but it's an interesting way of addressing the question. And one of the reasons I don't get bitten that much is because of the reflexes that I've had to develop over time, because I've been doing this for a while now. And I realized every now and then when an animal goes to bite me, and I've got my hands on the animal, and it goes to bite me, and suddenly my hands are up here, without me really giving it a lot of thought or instruction or even evaluation of the situation, my hands sort of disappear from the scene, usually just at the right time before the trouble happens, so that before the teeth close around my fingers or whatever. Sadly, it doesn't always happen. It doesn't always work out that well, but it's interesting how a reflex action is something that happens really before you have a chance to think about it. It's not a directed action. It's not necessarily even a controlled action. It's just something that is programmed in to happen before you really get a chance to think about it. And the reason why I was thinking about that is the text that I want to look at today. I'm really only looking at one text from the book of James today. And it's kind of about that, about reflex actions, about the things that we do or the way we react in certain situations without really thinking about it, and how that may not necessarily be helpful. Like, it's really helpful for me to have a quick withdrawal reflex if somebody's going to bite me, but there are other reflexes, other reactions that we have that may not be quite so helpful. Anyway, let me explain what I'm talking about here, because we're going to the book of James, James chapter 1 and verse 19, and he writes this: "My dear brothers, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry." Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. Now, I feel that one of the reasons he wrote that is because most of us are kind of hardwired the other way around. Most of us are quick to speak, slow to listen, and sometimes quick to become angry. So what he's talking about there is really our reflex action is to be quick to speak. And he's saying, no. We should be quick to listen. Which is an interesting kind of juxtaposition, because normally when you tell someone to do something quickly, you're wanting them to spring into action and do something. I remember many, many years ago when we were in vet school, there was an occasion where the vet students, which we were, would follow around the proper vets while they were doing their daily work. And there was a surgery case going on, an animal under anaesthetic, surgery happening, and something was going wrong. I think the animal was bleeding excessively and there were problems. So one of the vets who are in charge said to one of the vet students, "Look, can you go down the corridor to the dispensary area, get a bag of fluids, get this, get that, and come back so that we can deal with this situation with the animal." And so the vet student, and they said this very calmly to the vet student, because when you're in a crisis situation, you need to stay calm. And so the vet student went, "Okay, I'll go ahead and do that." And they just sort of started ambling out the door at a sedate pace. And the proper vet said to the student, "Quickly!" And the vet student went, "Whoa!" And went galloping down the hall and sprung into action and got the required supplies and came back and got the animal stabilized again. So quickly, when you just tell someone to be quick, it's normally a big call to action. You know, you fire up and you do something at a great rate of knots. But James here is saying, be quick to listen. which is kind of an interesting juxtaposition, because when you're listening, it looks like you're doing nothing, but that is far from the truth. There's a lot more to listening than doing nothing. So, I've always had the belief, the idea, that a Christian should be a good listener. And I have that belief because when I read the Bible, when I read the gospel stories, it comes across to me that Jesus was a really good listener. He was a really good listener, an exceptional listener. He was really able to connect with people in quite a remarkable way. And unfortunately, in the Bible, we don't get detailed descriptions of the conversations between people. They're almost like a shortened version of everything, a condensed version to get to the teaching point. But there are some examples where you get a little bit more dialogue, a bit of back and forth between Jesus and another person. And one of the examples of that comes in his interchange with a man called Nicodemus in John chapter 3. Now, Nicodemus was a Pharisee, as a teacher of the law. Most of his peers were kind of opposed to Jesus. They didn't like Jesus because a lot of his teaching was kind of against them. But Nicodemus, to his credit, was able to look at Jesus and go, "No, there's really something here. We need to find out more about this." And so in John chapter 3, verse 1, it says, "Now there was a man of the Pharisees named Nicodemus, a member of the Jewish ruling council. He came to Jesus at night and said, 'Rabbi, we know you're a teacher who has come from God, for no one could perform the miraculous signs you are doing if God were not with him.'" That's his opening statement. "And Jesus in reply declared, 'I tell you the truth, no one can see the kingdom of God unless he is born again.'" Now, when you read that, and there's a lot more to the interchange than that, when you read that the first time, it sounds like Jesus is not even listening at all, because he makes this comment about, "I tell you the truth, no one can see the kingdom of God unless he's born again." And you'd think, well, Nicodemus didn't really say anything about the kingdom of God or being born again or whatever. He's just kind of introducing himself, really. And Jesus just bangs straight in with that comment. And you think, well, that doesn't sound like he's listening well at all. But then you follow how Nicodemus replies. And Nicodemus is right on board with this straight away. It's almost like Jesus is such a good listener that he can hear not only the words that somebody is saying with their mouth, but he can hear what their heart, what is really on their heart, what is really on their mind. And this seemed to be exactly what was on the mind of Nicodemus. And so they get into this discussion about being born again that goes on for a number of verses there. And Jesus makes this connection with Nicodemus through being able to hear what was really going on, what he was really wrestling with inside, which is kind of, if you can do that, that's kind of elite level listening. And perhaps you and I aren't really likely to be able to do that, but it does show that Jesus was an exceptionally good listener. And therefore there is value in us improving our own listening skills. I was listening to a talk recently by a women's gymnastic coach. It was a TED talk. Her name is Valerie Condos Field. She was the women's gymnastic coach at the University of California, Los Angeles, and she had that position for 20-something years. She was really successful in the position. She took her teams to something like 7 championship titles. So she did very well in her role, and she was kind of reflecting back over the years of what she had learned as a coach. Because when she started out, she felt that she was really, really ineffective at what she was doing, because she thought, okay, I'm a coach now, therefore I need to boss people around, I need to tell people the hard truths, I need to, you know, ask them for more and push them and do all these things in order to get the best out of them, and didn't really work very well. And so over time, she kind of learned and developed her own style, which became ultimately effective. But during this talk that she was saying, she made this comment. She said, "I believe that one of the greatest gifts we can give another human being is to silence our minds from the need to be right or the need to formulate the appropriate response and truly listen when someone else is talking." So her view was that was one of the greatest gifts that you can give another human being is to truly listen when they are talking. And so that's what I wanted to talk about today, is about being a good listener. And I'm going to give some ideas on how to be a good listener. But I guess a good starting place is to show what bad listening looks like. And there's a great example of that in the Bible. There's probably many good examples of that in the Bible. There's one that particularly jumps out at me. It's a story that I really like, just for the humanity that's expressed here. And it comes from Matthew 16, and it starts at verse 5. And it's a story of the disciples and Jesus crossing the lake as they go from one place to another. So Matthew 16, verse 5 says, "When they went across the lake, the disciples forgot to take bread. 'Be careful,' Jesus said to them, 'be on your guard against the yeast of the Pharisees and Sadducees.' They," the disciples, "discussed this among themselves and said, 'It is because we didn't bring any bread.' Aware of their discussion, Jesus asked, 'You of little faith, why are you talking among yourselves about having no bread? Do you still not understand?'" And then he goes on to talk about how he fed the 5,000, he fed the 4,000. And he says in verse 11, "How is it you don't understand that I was not talking to you about bread, but be on your guard against the yeast of the Pharisees and Sadducees?" Then they understood what was going on. And one of the things I like about that story, and this is a bit of a side note, is when we read these stories, it's not like the disciples and Jesus were wandering around in Jerusalem and Israel and Galilee with a reporter writing things down and observing everything that was going on. No, these accounts come from the disciples. In fact, this is written by Matthew. He was a disciple. He was one of the yeast guys. And there's no attempt to garnish the truth there. They paint themselves as complete idiots, really. There's no reason to record that other than if that was what actually happened, that this is what they actually did in this particular interchange. Anyway, that's a sideline. But that's bad listening, because they forgot to bring bread, and they're all upset about that because they kind of felt probably that they let Jesus down because they hadn't adequately supplied for their journey. And as soon as Jesus is trying to make a teaching point about the danger of listening to the Sadducees and Pharisees, and as soon as he uses the word yeast, even though he's making a completely different point, all they hear is, "Oh, it's because we didn't bring any bread." And now he's really cross at us. And you can almost hear the sound of Jesus' palm hitting his head as he goes, "What are you doing? What are you talking about? That's nothing to do with what I'm saying. Can't you listen?" But no, they can't. Well, in fact, he eventually clarifies it and they get it in the end. But it's a very fine example of really poor listening on a number of different fronts there. So that's bad listening. What does good listening look like? I'm going to give you 5 points that constitute good listening. And I chose 5. I could have chosen 10, but I chose 5 because I wanted to come up with a mnemonic. And I wanted to be a mnemonic that was suited for 2020, the year of COVID-19. So I'm going to use the letters from COVID, COVID, as the letters to trigger off the reminders of what good listening looks like. Because we're going to continue to hear a lot about this COVID thing over the rest of this year. And I wanted to redeem that name and make it useful for something positive rather than all the negative that we currently associate with all the fear and anxiety and stress that comes with it. So when you see the name, you can think of something else that's actually going to be of a lot more benefit to your life. So I'm going to go through those 5. Now, the first letter is, of course, C. And C stands for commitment. In order to be a good listener, you need to commit to the conversation that you're having. And what that means is having focus on the other person. So that means, you know, eye contact, not looking around, not reading a book, not putting your phone away, turning the TV off, so that you can be completely focused on the other person. I wanted to give a couple of illustrations of some of these points along the way from the Bible. And the example I thought of for what being committed to a person for a conversation looks like comes from Luke chapter 8 and verse 43. I'm just going to flick over there now. So this is a story where Jesus has been summoned by a guy called Jairus, whose daughter is dying. He's got a 12-year-old daughter, and she's dying. She's in all sorts of trouble, and he is heartbroken about this. So he begs Jesus to come and help her. So Luke chapter 8 and verse 41. Then a man named Jairus, a ruler of the synagogue, came and fell at Jesus' feet, pleading with him to come to his house because his only daughter, a girl of about 12, was dying. As Jesus was on his way, the crowds almost crushed him. And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years, but no one could heal her. She came up behind him and touched the edge of his cloak, and immediately her bleeding stopped. "Who touched me?" Jesus asked. When they all denied it, Peter said, "Master, the people are crowding and pressing against you." But Jesus said, "Someone touched me. I know the power has gone out from me." Then the woman, seeing that she could not go unnoticed, came trembling and fell at his feet. In the presence of all the people, she told why she had touched him and how she had been instantly healed. And then he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace." So I like the picture that paints, because Jesus is on his way to a very important thing that he has to do. He's going to be dealing with a girl who's dying, and I think she is dead when he gets there. And he's got these people just pressing him on all sides. And this woman touches him, and he knows that this has happened. And he wants to have an interaction with her. He wants to hear from her, and he wants to speak to her. And you can see the commitment that he has. He has all these distractions, all these pressing things. He's got a mission that he has to complete, and he's got people on all sides clamoring all over him, touching him, all sorts of people touching him. And that's why Peter's kind of stumped by this. He's saying, "Well, there's probably about 20 people touching you. Why do you care so much about this one person touching you?" And Jesus has that commitment of pushing everything out of the way, and he wants to find that person so that he can talk to her and listen to her. That's what commitment looks like to, in its best form of being committed to a conversation. All distractions put aside. Step one. Step two is O, which is for open mind. That's coming into a conversation with an open mind. Because the classic thing that we as people do is when somebody starts talking, our minds start making judgments and running ahead so that we go, "Oh yes, I know what you're going to say. I know the point you're going to make. I'm already there before you even finish your first sentence. And my mind is already shut on that issue. I've already made my call. I'm now starting to figure out what I'm going to say next or what I'm going to have for lunch tomorrow or whatever it is." We don't really come with an open mind. And the trouble with that is we're usually wrong. That if we actually let things play out and listen closely, we will find that what we thought initially somebody was trying to say or make a comment about is not what they're really trying to talk about. So an open mind is a really important part. And we very, very readily close our minds too soon. So that we don't get the full message of what somebody's trying to tell us. So O is to have an open mind. V means visual, in that listening is not only an auditory experience. It's not just the words that we hear. There's tone of voice as well, which is an auditory component as well. But there's a visual component to it as well. There are facial expressions. There's body language that happens when we're listening, and we need to tap into that. We need to be aware of that. We need to be sensitive to that. The people will be communicating to us in a visual fashion, a non-verbal fashion as well. And an example I thought of for that comes way back from the Old Testament in the book of Nehemiah. Now, Nehemiah was cupbearer to the king, which basically means he was on the security detail for the king. He was like a bodyguard to the king, which meant he had quite a close working relationship with him. And the way the story plays out shows, I guess, how closely their friendship actually was. Because what happens is Nehemiah is a Jew, but he's far, far away from home. He's in a foreign kingdom serving under the king, who is a very powerful man. But he's keen to know what's happening back in Jerusalem. He knows that people are trying to rebuild the city and they're being really unsuccessful. And he hears news from the city that everything's going really badly, and he's really, really upset about this. And he's upset about it for months, but he can't really do much about it because he's stuck far, far away from home. But he does pray about it, but that's all. And he tries to keep that sadness locked up inside him until one day, after a few months, he just can't lock it in anymore. And this is what happens. In the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was brought for him, I, Nehemiah, took the wine and gave it to the king. I had not been sad in his presence before, so the king asked me, "Why does your face look sad when you are not ill? This can be nothing but sadness of the heart." So the king knows Nehemiah well enough, and so when he reads his body language and his facial expressions, he can see, well, something's up here, and I care about this guy, so I would like to know more about what's bothering him. I know he's not sick, because I can tell that too, but there is something bothering him, and because I care about him, I want to know more about it. And so he picks up on the visuals, he picks up on the body language and the facial expressions. And that's a really important part of listening too, is seeing what people are doing, not just what they are saying. Fourth point, it's just I, is to interpret back. Now that means when we're listening to people, they say a bit for a while, and as a way of responding to them, we can say, okay, yeah, I hear you, I understand you. But to actually put into words what we hear them saying is a really helpful exercise in good listening. It's like somebody says something, and so what I hear you saying is blah, 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 and you're trying to put it in your own words, which what that does is it gives them the opportunity to go, no, you didn't get that quite right. What I really mean is this. And you go, oh, okay, so what you're saying is this. And you can actually fine-tune your understanding of what they're trying to communicate to you by interpreting back to them what you think that they are saying, because we're all pretty imperfect at this, and this is a really good safeguard of actually trying to get the right message out of what they are saying. So interpreting back to them is a really good exercise to add into the good listening that we can do. And the final one, number five, is D, and that is dial down. And what I mean by that is that all of us have a lot going on up in here. We have that little voice in our head. We have our own thoughts, our own fears, our own anxieties, our own wants and needs and whatever. There's all this stuff that's going on in our heads. And if we want to be a good listener, one of the things we have to do is dial that down to get that into a background level so that we can actually hear what's going on the other side of the conversation. We need to dial it down. And when you think of the yeast guys in the boat, this is what they didn't do, because they were so consumed by their embarrassment and their worries about letting Jesus down, about not bringing the bread, that as soon as they heard yeast, it all just went off in their heads, and they go, oh no, he's all upset about the no bread, and they couldn't get out of their own heads enough to hear, well, Jesus is actually teaching us some whole other point about yeast as a parable or an analogy of what a little bit of bad teaching can do to a whole community, like a little bit of yeast can change a whole loaf of bread. So dialing down what's happening up here is a really important part of listening. So they're the five things: commit to the conversation, have an open mind, it's a visual experience as well as an auditory one, interpret back to people what you hear them saying, and dial down that inner monologue that's going on there. And really, you know, a lot of good listening just boils down to the idea of pay attention to the other person. And when you think about that, it's good listening is really an exercise in humility. It's an exercise in humility. And now humility is a Christian characteristic that is valued, but it's kind of hard to excel at, or at least to say that you excel at. You know, you can't go off and do a weekend course in humility and come back and go, yep, I did my course and now I've mastered humility. Yep, look at me. You can't really do that, because it kind of undermines the whole message. And humility is also perhaps sometimes a misunderstood concept as well, in that humility is not going around saying, oh yes, look at me, I'm such a lowly worm, what a terrible person I am. That's not really like that at all. In fact, C.S. Lewis gives a bit of instruction on this. I always like to read a bit of C.S. Lewis. In his book, Mere Christianity, he writes this. about a humble person. He says, "Do not imagine that if you meet a really humble man, he'll be what most people call humble nowadays. He will not be a sort of greasy, smarmy person who is always telling you that, of course, he is nobody. Probably all you'll think about him is that he seemed a cheerful, intelligent chap who took a real interest in what you said to him." And at another point, C.S. Lewis says, "True humility is not thinking less of yourself, it is thinking of yourself less." And that is a massively big distinction. It's thinking of yourself less. I mean, you can see how that relates to listening. If you're listening properly, you're not really thinking about yourself. You're not really concentrating on yourself at all. It's an opportunity to think less about yourself. And in a way, that's kind of liberating, really, because as I was saying earlier, we have a lot going on up here sometimes, and it can kind of weigh you down, really. It can be preoccupying, all the stuff that's going on in your own head. And it's liberating to have that opportunity to focus completely on somebody else so that all of this can go into the background. So I said earlier on that good listening is a gift you can give to somebody else, but in a roundabout way, it's actually a gift you can give to yourself as well, because you get that moment of liberation from your own internal monologue as well. So there's some of the components of what good listening looks like, and you can see those things kind of exemplified by Jesus. And I'm sure you can see why, as a Christian, good listening, I think, is important as well for the way that we interact with people and show that we care about them. And now, you might listen to all that and go, okay, well, I understand that and I agree with that. But you know what? The real cry of my heart is, I want somebody to listen to me. Sometimes I feel isolated. Sometimes I feel alone. Sometimes I feel like nobody understands me. What I really need is someone to listen in that way to me. I need someone who can hear me, who can understand me, who can accept me, somebody who is for me. And I understand that. I understand that. And I've got two responses to that. That's kind of a tough thing. But I've got two responses to that. One is, unfortunately, we don't have any control over how other people really treat us. So whether they're good listeners to us or not is not really under our control. All we can control is how well we listen to them. But secondly, I would say, and maybe more importantly, I really think that Jesus understands that cry of our hearts. And I say that because when we read through the Gospels, we see that for the whole time of his life while he walked on the earth, Jesus was in pretty much regular, constant communication with God the Father. They would talk and listen to each other. There was communication that went back and forth the whole time, even up to the Garden of Gethsemane, when Jesus was in anguish and praying. He was still in communication with his Father right up until the point that he was nailed to the cross. And at that time, when he was literally, the sins of the world were coming upon him, and he was literally becoming sin, and suddenly he started feeling completely differently. Like, not only was he in a sort of physical anguish, but he was in a spiritual and emotional anguish as well. And one of the last things that he said as he hung from the cross was, my God, why have you forsaken me?" And when he said that, he was actually quoting from a psalm. And I'm going to find the psalm. It's Psalm 22, because the next verse kind of elaborates on what he was actually quoting and feeling. It says, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me, so far from the words of my groaning? Oh my God, I cry out by day, but you do not answer." So what Jesus is really saying as he hung on the cross is, do you hear me? Are you listening? am I alone? And you could argue that that feeling of total and utter forsakenness that came upon him at that moment was what literally broke his heart. You know, Jesus actually died a lot quicker on the cross than what a lot of people do. And I reckon you could make the argument that he died of a broken heart because of that feeling of utter desolation and aloneness that he's experiencing at that moment. But, you know, so he does understand that sensation of aloneness and nobody listening to me. But, you know, he didn't stay dead. That very afternoon, two men took his body off the cross. And their names were, one of them was Joseph of Arimathea, and the other one was somebody we met earlier, a guy called Nicodemus. And these two men took the nails out of his hand and wrapped up his body and put him in the tomb that belonged to Joseph of Arimathea, which shows you the impact that Jesus had on Nicodemus, that he was talking about with him about being born again. And then one of the things you see Nicodemus doing next is this very public display of devotion to Jesus to show that he had in fact really been born again. He was in a whole different mindset now, and he showed this beautiful act of caring for Jesus when it looked like there was actually no point in doing so. It looked like it was all finished. But then he didn't actually stay in the tomb for very long. By the third day he had risen again and he appeared to the disciples, and then a few weeks after that he was raised up to heaven to be with his Father again. And what does he do there? What does Jesus do now that he is in heaven? Well, the Bible paints a couple of little pictures of what Jesus does now that he's back in heaven with his Father. One of the clearest ones comes from the book of Romans in chapter 8 and verse 34. Let me just find that. Christ, this is Romans chapter 8, verse 34, Christ Jesus, who died, more than that, who was raised to life, is at the right hand of God and is also interceding for us. So that paints the picture of he is at the right hand of God and he is interceding for us. Well, what does that mean? Well, the book of Hebrews helps us with that as well. Hebrews chapter 4 talks about Jesus as our great high priest. It says in Hebrews 4 and verse 14, therefore, since we have a great high priest who has gone through the heavens, Jesus the Son of God, let us hold firmly to the faith we profess. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but we have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet was without sin. Let us then approach the throne of grace with confidence. Let us then approach the throne of grace with confidence. Why can we be confident? Because he is our great high priest, and we know that he is going to listen to us. So what we know is that Jesus endured rejection, humiliation, injustice, torture, forsakenness, and death for us. But then he rose from death and ascended back to heaven and is now our great high priest, which means he hears us, he understands us, he accepts us, and he is for us. He intercedes for us. He is our advocate and our redeemer. I said earlier on that Jesus was an exceptional listener when he walked on the earth amongst us. And I would say that Jesus is still an exceptional listener now that he is seated at the right hand of his Father. And that's a blessing for us. But more than that, as his disciples and his followers, it's so important for us to develop our ability to listen well so that we can be more like him as well. Let's close in prayer. Father God, we thank you for Jesus, for his example, for the way that he treated people, for the way he connected to people, for the way he listened to people and had an impact on their hearts, the way that he was able to show that he cared for people and accepted them. And because he could listen to them, they would listen to him and he could change lives. And we thank you that Jesus is still able to listen to us and hear our cries, and be our advocate, be the one who intercedes for us. May we enjoy that fact. May we dwell on that fact that you are with us and for us. But may it also impact the way that we treat other people, that we be kind and caring listeners, focused listeners to the people who are around us, that we may give them that great gift as well. I pray. Amen. Well, thank you for listening, and hope you have a good Sabbath day.